Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 31 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi. You can find me at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And the topic for today is matchups, myth or fact. And this is basically based off of a piece that Jared is working on. And Jared, the crux of the piece is basically different kinds of finger spinners going up against right and left-handed batters. So tell me, where did you get the inspiration for this? What was the event that pushed that button in your body?
So the World Cup semi-final, there was about three occurrences where the wickets went against the matchups. And so I think it was Maharaj. There was lots of talk about how Maharaj didn't come in early enough to bowl because of matchups, which I'm not sure was 100% true anyway. Then Travis Head got right-handers out early on. Because it was such a prominent match, so many people reached out and were like, oh, so matchups are nonsense. And it's like, no, that's not what it means. And so I was like, it's actually, I could be wrong. Might be. No, there was a World Cup game in 2019 where I wrote a very similar piece when Dan Vettori, I think, misunderstood, not Dan Vettori, sorry, Kane Williamson misunderstood matchups at that time. So I think players misunderstand them. I think coaches misunderstand them, but I think fans misunderstand them as well. Mm. And so they see an off spinner get out of right hand and they go, oh, matchups don't matter. And it's like, no one ever said that off spinners will never get right handers out again. Like that's just nonsense. What we're trying to say is that there are ways of putting the game into your advantage. And there are matchups within matchups, if you know what I mean. There are some bowlers who are still very, you know, might be an off-spinner who would still prefer to bowl to right-handers than left-handers. Syed Ajmal was a perfect example of someone like that, right? So these things do exist and you still have to know about them. But overall, there is a reason why teams follow these patterns. This show was brought to you by HCL Tech, leaders in data and technology. And you can see their names right there on the sleeve of the Australian team.
Yeah, and it's such a big talking point these days, right? You talk to general managers of franchises and matchups is one of the main, strategic elements that they bring up. And you mentioned how Travis Head took back-to-back wickets and he's a right-arm part-time off-spinner of right-handers. He removed two right-handers off successive deliveries and then got out to a slow left-armer, himself being a left-handed batter. So based on that and everything that we know of cricket and have seen in our lifetimes, is it, you know, easy to say, or is it fair to say that it is a myth that right-arm offies are only effective against left-handers and slow left-armers, you know, cannot bowl to left-handed batters? I mean, that I feel, you know, is a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you could make professional cricket if you are only good against left-hand and right-hand. Like, it's just, it's never going to happen. That's not really what matchups means, though. And I think that's where the misunderstanding comes in. There are some times when bowlers actually do really well. I think Adil Rashid at the moment, over the last couple of years, has been bowling better to left-handers than he has been to right-handers, for instance. So there are times when it goes the other way. I think Mitch Santner was another one who at times was better against left-handers than right-handers. And there are many reasons for that and everything else. So that it's never the case that you cannot bowl an off-spinner to a right-hander. And I do think that a lot of this is misunderstanding statistics and probabilities and everything else. But the truth is that for the vast majority of cricketers, that is the case. That if you're an off spinner, I think it's Pereira, the off spinner from Sri Lanka in Test cricket. I think I'm going to get this right. Who has an average of 22 against left-handers and 48 against right-handers. Jack Leach for the longest time was the opposite of that. Right. So there are plenty of examples. I think Graham Swann in Test cricket averaged 40 against right-handers and 21 against left-hand or 19 against left-handers. So there are plenty of players who completely play up to the matchup. And there are plenty of other players who are in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And occasionally players who even go on in another direction with that. And then you've got the batters as well. We think about it as spinning away and spinning in. But you could see with some players, they really like finger spin or they really like wrist spin. They don't care which direction it's going. They prefer those kinds of spin. And, you know, the kind of shots you play and the angles and all these different things and the way that you play your game all comes about, in that way. But if you're bowling 100 balls to a right-hander, you're much better bowling those 100 balls with left-arm finger spin than you are with right-arm finger spin. There's just no doubt about that right across the game.
We've seen, though, many times captains, they, you know, hold bowlers back because if a, you know, southpaw is batting, they won't bowl that left-arm finger spinner over there. And it was interesting how, I think last year, England were touring Pakistan for 70-20 eyes or something, and Mohammad Nawaz cleaned up Moeen Ali, and Sun Ameer, who was on commentary, was very vocal that this myth needs to be debunked. And even though there is a lot of truth behind this notion as well, I just feel like it shouldn't impact the game that way. Like, for instance, like, you know, Travis Head, take him for example. In that semi-final, he got those back-to-back wickets. The first one was that of Heinrich Klassen. Now, Heinrich Klassen is a batter who attacks off-spin a bit more than other bowling types. And he also gets out to it quite often. And Pat Cummins, you know, he probably thought at that point that this is, look, the in-form power hitter, and he's going to take his chances. And I'll bring on Travis Head and hope that he makes an error and gets out. And well, what do you know? Travis Head did remove Heinrich Klassen. So that's a prime example of this phenomena, isn't it? And the fact that there's more to matchups than basic matchups.
Yeah, so go back to the Sun Ameer thing. Moeen Ali, for a long period of time, was striking more than two runs a ball against left-arm fingerspin, right? So she sees Moeen Ali go out once and goes, oh, the matchup is myth. No, it's not. We have hundreds of balls of data that say that Moeen Ali, Ben Dunk, and Chris Gayle all score at two runs a ball against left-arm fingerspin for a long period of time. Right. But that doesn't mean you don't bowl left arm finger spin to him, because it might be the long boundary. The wind might be in. The pitch might be spinning more. Absolutely. It might be someone who likes to bowl to left handers. It might be someone who's got them out. So, you know, we just did another podcast. We talked about Nicholas Perrin. Nicholas Perrin averages 47 or 48 or something against leg spinners in T20 cricket. But he averages 15 against Adil Rashid. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a matchup within a matchup here. And it's really funny in cricket. There are so many reasons why you don't bowl a bowler. They might be tired. It might be the wrong end. If they're a spinner, the breeze might be in the wrong place for them. Whether it might be the way that they're delivering or even the way that they're being hit. Short boundary in one particular direction.
Might have a callus on their finger.
Yeah, all these different things play a part in why we do and don't bowl. You know, the dewers come in, right? And we go, oh, they're not bowling in for matchups. But actually, the ball's just got slippery. So they're just hopefully waiting for the ball to get less slippery to bring the spinners on. Or the opposite. They brought the spinners on early because they could see the dews about to come in and they want to get a couple of overs to spin out early. But matchups is the one that everyone kind of focuses on. But truthfully, matchups work. If they didn't work, teams wouldn't use them. It's not, it's not an accident that this has happened, right? And I think DRS has probably made matchups work a little bit more. If you go back to the 90s, and I don't have as much ball-by-ball data from the 90s, it's not as prominent. LBW, certainly for finger spinners, and that's, you know, the crux of this piece is really the finger spinners, but it's massively changed. And you have a look at that now, and you don't have a choice. But there was England played the West Indies recently, and I think it was Robin Powell, and I want to say Nicholas Perrin, but I can't remember who the other batter was. There were two guys who absolutely smashed left-arm pace at the crease at the same time. England had Rhys Topley, Tamal Mills, and Sam Curran. At a certain point, they didn't have a choice. They're just going to have to bowl those left-arm pace bowlers. And no one's saying that just by bringing the left-arm pace on, you're suddenly going to get hit for 25 in the next over. What you are saying is, at that particular time, there might be a better bowler to use. That's no different than any other part of cricket, right? The difference is we now know a lot more about this. And if you look at MS Dhoni, he was doing this for years. Lots of captains did this for years, right? It's just now that there's a lot more data so we can understand it a little bit more. But the basic matchup might be this player is a left-hander and they're facing an off-spinner, so we're more likely to bowl them. What if that off-spinner doesn't bowl very well to left-handers? So that's the next part of it. What if the pitch isn't spinning all that much, right? So there's another part of it. What if this is not the part of the game you want to bowl that bowler? There's another part of it, right? What if this batter actually likes facing off spin? So matchups are sort of seen as this one-dimensional thing, whereas I would think that the vast majority of captains who think about matchups are thinking about them on like 5 and 6 levels almost every time. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just like, oh, there's two left-handers at the crease. I'll bowl an off spinner, right? I can get through a couple of overs of off spin here and I can get away with it. But I think too often when the matchup doesn't work, that's when everyone jumps on it. But they've forgotten all the times when it has worked, because the numbers are clear, right? That it is much better to bowl off-spin to a left-hander, much better to bowl left-arm finger spinner to a right-hander. There is no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of you know, same type of bowling hand bowler or off spinner bowling to like a slow left armer bowling to a left hander, right? And there's a prime example in that semi-final as well. Travis Head was dismissed by Keshav Maharaj. And, you know, Maharaj is one of the best slow left armers going around in modern day cricket. Even across formats, you could probably make that case now, because in limited overs cricket, he's had a fair amount of success in recent times. And it was also evident via his performances in the World Cup. Fantastic numbers. I think he had as good a World Cup as Kuldeep, right? If I'm not wrong, that's basically what it was. And was it surprising for you to find out that Maharaj has actually been more economical versus left-handed batters in the four-year period building up to the recently concluded ODI World Cup?
No, because I've seen that many times before. There are, you know, there are many bowlers who subvert that. And in fact, if you're the two that come to mind, and I don't know if Imad Wazim might have been another one at one stage in his career, but Mitch Santner and Keshav Maharaj, there aren't that many that, like, you, if you haven't worked out a way to bowl to left-handers, right? You're probably not going to be in the side every game because so many teams have left-handers. So I'm never surprised at that. I think it's always worth noting. And also, you know, to go back to it. So the Australia-New Zealand game in 2019, when Kane Williamson bowled himself because there was two left-handers at the crease, I would have argued that Mitch Santner had a better record against left-handers than Kane Williamson did at that point, right? But Kane Williamson bowled himself. But part of the reason was, is because the end they were bowling from had a short mid-wicket field. So it part of the reason was, oh, it's matchups. But it's also, it's harder to hit Kane Williamson to that mid-wicket because you're hitting across the line. And so there's, and the Maharaj thing, let's go back to the full Maharaj story. So a lot of people were really upset that Maharaj didn't bowl earlier in the World Cup semi-final because they thought that, they thought it was a matchup thing with Travis Head. And I'm not saying it wasn't a matchup thing, but Aidan Markram had bowled very, very well early on, bowling his off spin. And then they bowled Shamsie to Travis Head. Travis Head loves coming down the wicket. And I think a part of the reason they did it is they were hoping that Travis Head would come down, try and smash Shamsie back over his head and hole out. That's not how Maharaj is probably going to get his wicket. It's not unlikely, but just because he's spinning it back in, it's less likely to get that kind of a wicket. These aren't mistakes. These are tactical decisions made in the course of a game with where a matchup might be a part of it, but there's all these other micro elements to all these things, and they're thrown away because people think it's the wrong decision. I actually think when Maharaj came on in that game was maybe an over or two late at most, right? Because what you really wanted to do was squeeze Australia in the middle order, which is exactly what Maharaj does in that game. And he almost gets South Africa home because he puts so much pressure on, especially Smith and Manus Labuschagne, two right-handers.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right, just on that. Travis Head, he is an elite batter versus slow left armers. He absolutely destroys them. And that's a matchup that favors Travis Head, if anything, right? And Maharaj gets him out with the first delivery he bowls in the entire game. The plot thickens and all of a sudden there's this ambiguity.
Yeah. And you know, when I don't think I've ever seen a player who's never been dismissed by a good matchup for them. Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to think if there's like, there was, what's his name? The little South African all-rounder, Farhan Behadin?
Behardeen.
He had a period where he wasn't dismissed in the death over like a year and a half or something ridiculous, right? Just no one could get him out of the death. That's almost never happens, right? That almost never happens. Chris Gayle goes out to left arm finger spin, right? But, you know, Brian Lara averaged 120 odd against Murali, right? In test cricket. Still went out to him, right? So that is always going to happen. And again, Travis Head was trying to attack from first ball, you know, made an error, everything else. Hasn't faced a lot of Maharaj. So he doesn't, there's not a lot of history between those two. So we don't actually know if Maharaj is not something that is an issue for Travis Head, which is another matchup and another level of matchup and individual player matchups. Was actually, I think, far worse. That's so when matchups first started, I promise you, there were all these times when they would bring a bowler on and it'd be like, well, he's got him out three times in nine balls. And I was like, yeah, how? Like, I'm going to need more information here, right? And you go back and it's like, well, one was caught at deep mid-wicket, you know, one was in the, on the last ball of the innings or whatever that may be. Because realistically, you need 200 balls you know, to be, or at least 100, I would say, in T20 cricket, to be pretty confident with any kind of matchup. And when I first got into T20 cricket, teams were doing things on, like, teams were hiring players. There was an IPL player, I forget his name, who got hired by a franchise on the back of a 36-ball sample against spin bowling. So he'd virtually never faced spin except for 36 balls. That could all be one guy bowling waist-high full tosses to him.
True.
Right? Like, we don't know that sort of stuff. So we do need more sample sizes. And generally, over a period of time, we do know what Travis Head does against finger spin, right? We do have more of an understanding of that sort of thing. But we also, there's an understanding in the game, and the game is unfurling. And so you have to factor in all these kinds of things. Matchups is no different than knowing which way the wind is blowing, or knowing which is the short boundary, or making a guess on how the pitch might play later, right? You're just trying to take something that is a 50-50 situation and make it slightly better for you.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned a lot of contributing factors over there, the wind, the surface, the longer boundary, you know, even different kinds of left arm finger spinners, you know, they're all not the same. Exactly. Like the whole individual matchups part, you know, Travis Head might average a certain amount versus slow left armers, but how much does he average against Maharaj? Like, these things are small intricacies that need to be looked at. And all of this needs to be looked at in context of these contributing factors. But here's an interesting one for you, right? We've spoken about these different various contributing factors, but how much of, how important or crucial is the phase of the game in this? That how does a particular type of bowler fare versus a particular type of batter, let's say in the power play, then the middle overs, and at the deaths? Because there's a lot of truth behind that notion as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one way, I think teams who are really matchup dependent with their bowling, you can kind of screw with them a little bit, right? So you can send out players at certain times. Like, let's say you've got David Willey in your team, right? And the other team's got their left arm finger spinner who always bowls through. Like, David Willey's facing Akhil Hasan, right? And you send out David Willey, and they're going to be like, ah, oh, do we want to keep bowling Akhil Hasan here? Because David Willey's been sent out to smash him. And if David Willey gets away, it's like a 25 run over, right? And that's going to take a big dent out of it. Okay, so we're going to move Akhil Hasan away from David Willey. Well, straight away, your plans have completely changed. And so if you're too dependent on anything, and as someone who worked in cricket, I think I've been told so much that teams are too dependent on matchups. I'll tell you the things that I think teams are way too dependent on. It's wind and boundary size. I've seen teams try and hit the same ball to the same boundary for an entire game just because it was a short boundary, where I was like, but there's no fielders on the other side. They've got like four guys on the leg side boundary over here. You could score two runs a ball on the other side easily over and over again. Like, why would you do that? And that never is talked about, right? Yeah. Commentators never bring that one up because that is thought of as proper cricket knowledge. Well, now we're learning about our data and everything else. And so phase of the game, sometimes captains do use their bowlers in the wrong period now because of matchups. But that happens in test matches, and it's always happened in test matches. How often has someone come out that has a weakness against a short ball, so you bring your fast bowler back on early, right?
Yeah.
So he comes on. Well, now your fast bowler has bowled two spells in the first 20 overs, and he's gassed. You can't use him again for another 20, 25 overs if you want him to bowl at full pace. That's been happening since the dawn of time, right? That is a matchup. But that's never talked about like it's a matchup. And so my point would be is that everything, especially whether it be T20, ODI, but even more so test match, is very much 5D chess, right? There are layers along layers upon layers. Like, for instance, I can't remember if it was that World Cup semi-final. Oh, yeah, no, well, it was the World Cup final when Australia was doing that tactic when they were bowling everyone for one over at a time, right? I love that tactic. I loved it. When I worked for the Melbourne Stars, Glenn Maxwell did it. I've loved it when I watch other teams do it. I really like it because it makes batters think differently, right? It's a really interesting way of going. But Australia also needed as many overs from their part-timers as possible. And Mitch Marsh was bowling really, really well. And they kept taking him back out, right? So you've gone with a plan which actually eventually works and was really, really sensible. And I love the plan. But there is still an element when you do something like that of... you are robbing something of your team because you were doing that. That is the case of kind of all tactics, but we pretend they're not, right? And you see, I would say you can throw Owen Morgan in, you can throw Emma Stoney in. It doesn't matter how good a captain you think this player is. Mike Brearley, Douglas Jardine, right? Arjuna Ranatunga, all of them. they make as many mistakes as they make good decisions. But eventually, if they've made enough good decisions, that gives them a chance to be ahead in the game and they can use their resources better and be successful. We forget that they've also made several mistakes along those lines, along that. And if you, the best example of this is not really a captaincy one, but it's Australia in the 1999 semi-final against South Africa. Well, we forget that they actually choked more than South Africa. It's just that South Africa lose that game. That's the only difference, is that South Africa choked right at the end and lost that game. But Australia had like three chances to win that game earlier. Glenn McGrath fumbles a ball that happens to hit the stump, so they still get a run out. Paul Rifle misses a catch that he really should have taken, and Darren Lehman misses a run out he really should have got. And we that doesn't get remembered. And it's the same with all these sorts of captaincy things. Hmm. And so you end up focusing on the fact that Maharaj comes on too late, not focusing on the fact that Maharaj actually put them in a position to win that game, right? Because of when he came on, he completely clamped the middle down, which allowed South Africa to use Kotsia at the other end, knowing that Kotsia could be more expensive. If Maharaj had bowled three or four overs early on, right, South Africa might have been in a better position in that game or in a worse position in that game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the main point, right, that it's looked upon as something that's very black and white matchups, whereas there is a lot of gray over here. And you mentioned Maharaj doing well, you know, against left-handers. You also brought up Santner. The same kind of thing kind of applies to Glenn Maxwell, right, as a right-arm offie versus right-handers, quite similar to Santner because, you know, he's a defensive bowler. He doesn't go for a lot of runs, and batters fail to get underneath Maxwell. So he's actually a smart option versus right-handed batters.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you'll find that there are lots of guys out there that have those little quirks within them. And I think with Maxwell is he is a right-handed batter, and he thinks like a right-handed batter. And so he is basically bowling in a way that he would not like people to bowl to him. And that is works for him. And I can't remember, there was someone... There was a bowler I was watching the other day, and a commentator said a very similar thing about this bowler. They said he's not a very good bowler. Oh, it might have been about Livingston. They're saying, look, he's obviously not a very good bowler, and occasionally he's going to go for a lot of runs, and his overall numbers aren't very good. But he's also very good at putting the ball in areas occasionally that batters don't want the ball to be in, right? And so, you know, you look at Livingston, and he tries to bowl match-up bowling. So he bowls leg spin to right-handers and he bowls off spin to left-handers. I would say his leg spin is twice as good as his off spin, right? And his leg spin, he actually gets the ball to spin and rip and he can cause issues for people. Whereas his off spin, he's quite often really rudimentary. You could make an argument that he could bowl leg spin to both left-handers and right-handers in that situation, but maybe he wouldn't bowl as much. But when he bowls to left-handers, he's trying to use another advantage to keep himself in the game and everything else. There's no perfect answers for any of these things because there's no perfect answers for cricket. And so I think the bigger problem is that the vast majority of people don't really understand data. Matchups is now used for a catch-all for about 20 different things to begin with. And I think there's this idea, the Sana Mer thing that you said before, and not to slag off her, because she's certainly not the only person who thinks this, but there's this idea that it has to work 100% of the time. No one who has ever worked in cricket data will say that matchups will work every single time. And this, I'll tell you the same thing I say to team owners. Our job is to make sure that the game is weighted in our favor more often than not. That doesn't mean we're going to win every game. We're going to lose a lot of games still. But if it's weighted in our favor, that means we should win more than we lose. And that gets us into a finals with a chance to make a splash occasionally. Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN. today.
Yeah. Well, just to dig a bit deeper with respect to right-arm offies versus right-handers, we spoke about how Glenn Maxwell was a great defensive bowler when it came to that particular matchup. But we also see that there's some right-arm off-spinners who do really well versus right-handed batters in terms of wicket-taking. And Mahesh Teekshana is one of those names, and Mujibur Rahman from Afghanistan also stands out in that regard. But both of them are mystery spinners. They do have that mystery element to them. And do you think that that is kind of a necessity when it comes to wicket-taking for right-arm offies versus right-handed batters? Because the conventional offies aren't taking as many wickets. They could go for lower economies, but the wicket-taking aspect of this thing is a bit impactful.
I don't think there's an off-spinner who has dominated right-handers that hasn't had a ball that goes both ways this century. That's kind of a boat. That's kind of across both all three formats of the game, but white ball, red ball, if you want to do it that way. Syed Ajmal was the one. I think we mentioned him at the top again. Yeah. Someone who spins it both ways. Murali was the other one that also did that. Generally, if you don't have a ball that goes both ways, you're less likely to dominate right-handers if you're an off spinner. Doesn't mean that. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't still survive. Ashwin doesn't really spin the ball both ways consistently. I know he can, but you know, he's not like a Mujib or a Teekshana or a Syed Ajmal. You know, uses his a little bit more sparingly, or he uses it really obviously without the mystery, where he's just literally bowling leg spinners down, which is more that Joe Rootley and Livingston way of doing things. And he's got a fine record against right-handers, but he's certainly not dominant in that particular way. And you know, if you look in Test cricket, I'll try and look at the entire database here, just while I've got it in front of me. But if you look at Test cricket overall, it's generally the best off spinners are not particularly dominant when it comes to right-handers, just because they just don't have that advantage of being able to spin the ball both ways. It doesn't mean that Ashwin isn't still really good against right-handers. Like he's better against right-handers than most off spinners are against left-handers, right? Because he's just that good. But there's a big difference between him. So I think I looked at seven off spinners who had over, I think it was 40 wickets against left-handed and right-handers over the last 10 or 15 years recently for Test cricket. And Syed Ajmal was the only one with a better record against right-handers than left-handers. And no one else was particularly close, right? So Nathan Lyon averaged 34 against right-handers, Harbhajan Singh 31, Ashwin 28. Murali, 17, right? Who else have we got here? Moen Ali, 40. Graham Swan, 38. Sorry, I think I said he was 40 before. Pereira, 51. So I've already mentioned him. Syed Ajmal, 25. Mehdi Hasan, 35. Roston Chase, 56. Jeetan Patel, 55. Chris Gayle, 53. Shane Chillingford, 33, right? So, and then the next best one, Saqlain Mushtaq.
Ah.
So if you want to take wickets realistically against right-handers, and the opposite is also true, you need a ball that goes away from them if you want to take them consistently. That doesn't mean that Ashwin and some of these other guys haven't worked out how to get right-handers out, because they wouldn't have careers otherwise. But those numbers are not particularly sexy that I just read out there, right? You know, outside of Murali and Mushtaq and Syed Ajmal, and those are guys who did have a ball that went the other way.
Exactly. They had the Dusra. And right? It makes sense, right? The rate of incision goes up considerably when you can turn the ball both ways, and that's just a fact. I mean, that's not even a conjecture at this point. This is not just us theorizing. That's how it is. And data also suggests that right-handed batters don't prefer facing slow left armers, because of course they prefer the ball coming in, which is what the right arm off spinners do. And when it goes away, they are more troubled. But then again, there are some anomalies in this. Shreyas Iyer and Joss Butler, they stand out. But even they, like Shreyas in particular, the scoring rate isn't as high versus slow left armers. But then there are some right-handed batters for whom this holds true. And all four of Rohit Sharma and Daryl Mitchell, Steve Smith and Mohammad Rizwan, not only do they not get dismissed all too often by slow left armers, but they also put them under pressure by attacking them. So what makes these batters special?
Well, so a couple of years ago, I did a big look into all this, and I found that there was, I don't know, maybe 8% to 10% of right-handers who really like left-arm fingerspin. And I found Devon Conway was the only guy who liked facing off-spin. more than left arm finger spin. So I would say that, you know, right-handers are, and this is right across the board, we've talked about this a lot, whether it be seam bowlers, spin bowlers, or batters, people who are right-hand dependent are usually a little bit more adaptable, and left-handed players are usually a little bit more single usage. But there's no reason why you can't like the ball spinning away from you, because you might like finger spin, you might like the pace, you might like the way it comes out, you might like the way that you'd be able to read it, all these sorts of things. And, you know, if you're Daryl Mitchell, you've got a big front step. If you're Shreyas Iyer, you've got very quick feet. You might have skills to be able to handle that. But over a long period of time, the vast majority of players are not going to have those kinds of records. And so I think Virat Kohli is a player who early in his career played left arm finger spin really, really well, and has clearly made a technical change, probably because of the test wickets that they've had in India. And now struggles against left arm finger spin in white ball cricket because of that. And so it's less likely, it's very unlikely for Moeen Ali or Ben Dunk or Chris Gayle to ever not be good against left arm finger spin. Right? They're just putting their knee down and just playing through the line. And left arm finger spinners don't have as much variety in the way that they bowl, and they're probably just going to hit them over and over again. But I do think it's really interesting that left-handers are far worse against off, or are worse in general against off spin, and you have less outliers than there is right-handers, which you have a lot more outliers, as you said, against left arm finger spin.
That's interesting, right? I'd love to know what the data says on this, because what you've said basically is that left-handers struggle versus right arm offies more than right-armers do, or right-handed batters do, against left arm off spin. So how many outliers are there for left-handers who do well against off spin?
Devon Conway.
That's it.
When I didn't look at it again for this piece, but I looked at it in T20 cricket a couple of years ago. And this was before Devon Conway was a big deal. This is when I started following him, because I was like, there's something going on with this guy that's not like the others. He was the only player I found who had a better record against the ball spinning away than spinning in amongst left-handers. Right? Yeah. There's a couple of other players who are around par or slightly above, you know, around that area. But he was like way better at that stage, and it didn't make any sense. So I do think it's because left-handers in general are a little bit more one-dimensional, because left-handers have such an advantage in cricket in so many different ways that they don't, right-handers don't have any advantage because they're in the majority, and everyone is always scheming on how to get it. Like, it's very hard to be a professional cricketer and not be a good bowler against right-handers. There aren't many left-handers. There aren't many people who are specialist bowlers against left-handers who aren't off-spinners anyway.
Have there ever been any left-arm off-spinners who can turn the ball both ways?
Harath was the one, wasn't he?
There you go.
I don't think his ball, a bit like Ashwin, they both could spin the ball the other way, but they're not like Tikshana or Mujeeb or those sorts of guys. I don't think there's as much mystery with their ball that goes the other way. But that would be my point. It's the same as outswing bowling, right? So every left arm bowler can bring the ball back into right handers, but how many can take it the other way?
Yeah.
Right. Whereas right arm bowlers, that's far more common that you can swing the ball in both directions. And, you know, and you should at least be aiming for that. So left arm bowlers are not even trained on how to do that. And, you know, it's something I've been talking to coaches for quite a few years. So I do think that all plays in. But again, it's why left arm finger spinners are quite often not bowled to left handers. Because left-handers are so good against them. And that's why you see these crap off spinners bowling like Aidan Markram and Travis Head and, you know, real part-timers will bowl when there's a couple of left-handers at the crease, right? Because it's so stark, right?
I mean, Mohammad Hafeez built a career out of bowling to left-handers in limited overs cricket.
Yeah, and doing it, having that skill as that sort of second, you know, like the sixth bowler especially, is so important, right? Because
he rose to the top of the ODI rankings, bowling rankings, you know, getting left-handers out for fun.
Let's have a look at him. So you said this is one day, you said, yeah?
Yes. Mohammad Hafeez and one day internationals versus left-handers.
What do you think what do you think his average was against right-handers?
Probably high 30s.
51.
Wow.
Right?
Well, there you have it.
Now, let's just have a look at him against left-handers. But you see how stark these things are. And because Mohammad Hafeez was a very, very clever cricketer, right? We all know that. Maybe not as much with the selections of recent times, but a very, very clever cricketer. But Mohammad Hafeez was not a great off-spinner. He was a good fifth option at times in teams, and would it, you know, and certainly really developed his cricket at the end of his life. But he wasn't an automatically great off spinner. If not, he wouldn't have been a part timer. He wouldn't have been the fifth option. He would have been the fourth option. So in order for him to be really successful, you have to use him in the right way. Joe Root, especially in Test cricket, is a perfect example of this, right? Joe Root, I think in the first couple of innings of Test matches against right-handers, averages over 60, right? Mm. But he's a constant threat against left-handers, right? He bowls really, really well against them and, you know, keeps pressure on them and everything else. So let's just find Hafiz here. Against left-handers, his average was 28, right?
There you go.
So almost half of what his other average is. And as I said, there are certainly outliers here and everything else. But
and the phase of the game conversation comes into this once again because he was primarily a power play bowler in ODI cricket.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. Sorry, I'm just having a look here. There's this is against left-handers. And I'm trying to see who this bowler is. Shoaib Malik averaged 62 against left-handers.
Wow.
So really, really struggled. I'm just trying to find if there's any. So Hafiz has an average of 27. Ashwin has an average of 25. That's higher than I thought. Muhammad Nabi is 26. Mehdi Hasan is 19. Right. Wow. So you can see some of these guys just really the average drops against left-handers. And then you've got, you know, your more Nathan Lyon sort of guys who are a little bit more in the middle, right? Who can bowl to both. And if you look at Nathan Lyon in a test match, I often think, especially early in a test match, I'd rather Nathan Lyon bowling to right-handers. Later in a test match, I'd rather him bowling to left-handers. So even in the conditions of that game, and you've talked about, you know, different times, it's the same. You might want your off-spinner to be bowling to the right-hander early on because the ball will skid through and it could still beat the outside edge as well, right? But later on, when it's turning more, you might want to bowl to the left-hander because if they're trying to hit you across the line, you're spinning the ball away from the blade. So even within the matchups, there are matchups within the matchups.
Matchupception. That's what we're going to call it. But ultimately, what we can deduce is that matchups clearly aren't as straightforward as we are made to feel. And there are a lot of different facets or factors at play over here, right? You spoke about the surface, the wind. Form is another big one for both batter and bowler. Match situation, phase of the game, all of
tiredness.
These things. Tiredness, head-to-head records, individual matchups. There's just so much to it. And, you know, just to talk about the impact that matchups have on today's game, because of course, data also tells you a story, and it's not like they're fake. They are certainly real. It's just that they're probably blown out of proportion by certain team managements, and some team managements are probably more aware of the other things that we spoke of. So how pronounced an impact do you think that they have on the state of a game?
I think they had a really big impact when they first came in, but it was more that individual player versus player matchup was probably the bigger thing. Then I think teams got a bit obsessed with there's a left-hander here, we need to bring an off-spinner on. I think teams are actually getting a lot smarter now. And I think if you had a conversation with these teams, they would be like, no, it wasn't. We didn't just do it for that. We brought this player on for, you know, this reason and this reason. And so they are changing. I think the biggest problem with matchups isn't the way they're used. I think it's the way they're spoken about by people who don't understand them.
Yeah.
And I think that they've become the villain of modern cricket, whereas they're not. It's just giving a captain more information. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One is there's this thing in cricket, we need our captains to be mythical, you know, wizards who understand. Well, do you know what why captains are so smart? Is one of the reasons is they pick things up and they see codes really early and they understand patterns and they understand how things work. That's one thing of captaincy that you have to have. Matchups is another bit of information that they need to have. In the same way that, you know, if you're playing against a team who's really good at running between wickets, you want to be, that's something you want to know beforehand, right? That doesn't mean that you might not bring all your fielders in. And then that's the game they smash a bunch of fours and sixes past you, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the captain was wrong. He went with the information that he thought, and in that particular situation, it didn't work. So I do think there's this idea that they make cricket less sexy. Whereas actually, I mean, I thought one of the coolest things in cricket was when Nathan Leeman was having those messages up for Owen Morgan, and we're like, great, finally, we are literally saying there is too much information for a captain to have there. We're going to give him a shortcut so he knows a little bit more, but it's going to be a really specific, like, chess move shortcut, right? That Owen Morgan is going to have to remember, okay, so when they put up that chess move, it actually means that I need to bowl short balls with three men back, fine leg, backward square leg, and a deep mid wicket, right? Or this is when we bowl wide Yorkers with third up, right? So slower ball, wide Yorkers, whatever that may be. There's Owen Morgan still has the ability to get that information and reject it, right? And any captain does. And also how they go about it. There was a situation where a player was promoted in a game and the game finished. And I was like, that's interesting. Why did they promote them? And I got a direct message from the captain of the team going, did you see that? I was like, yeah. And he's like, we did that because of what you've been saying. I said, been saying about what? And they said, oh, we wanted to disrupt their middle overs plans. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was the point where I realized that teams are now going the other way, right? So they are now using matchup information as batters against bowlers, right? But if you go, there's a really good video of David Warner chatting on mic. And I think it was when they were playing the West Indies before the T20 World Cup in Australia. Listen to David Warner and Aaron Finch talking. Neither of those guys both believe in matchups and they look at matchups, but they're both very instinctual cricketers. Listen to how they're talking, right? They're literally saying, David Warner's going, that was my fault. I should have maximized that over. I should have attacked a little bit harder, right? And what he is saying, Bayram, is that was a good matchup for me and I let you face too many balls in that over when you shouldn't have been. It should have been me attacking at this end. That wasn't him with a spreadsheet. That wasn't Aaron Finch getting something out of his pocket. That is probably a left-arm finger spinner bowling to David Warner or whatever that matchup was, and him thinking to himself, well, I let Finchy face four balls that over, and I didn't put any pressure back on the bowler, and so they got away with an over that we should have attacked it, right? Matchups are cricket and have always been cricket, right? And if you go back, one more incredible story is the Colas King story. When Colas King makes runs in that 79 World Cup and you listen to the conversations that Viv Richards and Colas King have, Colas King basically says, they're bringing on their fifth bowlers now and they don't have a really strong fifth bowler. I'm going to go on the attack and try and do that. The entire history of cricket is about matchups, right?
Cool.
You have a player who comes out and they're not very good against short pitch bowling. You bring your fast bowler on. Darryl Cullen comes out in the middle and Shane Warne's in the game. You bowl Shane Warne to him. Right.
It's so also weird. Because Shane Warne's going to get in Daryl Cunningham's head. That's another reason. That's another matchup.
No. But that is part of, that's what I'm saying. Those matchups always exist. Right. And if you go back and you can see situations when two right-handers are batting. I think there's, I think it might be England in the 87 World Cup final when Alan Border is bowling, because Tim May's being hit out of the attack. So they bring on the left arm part-time finger spinner. Right. Well, part of the reason was Tim May was hit out of the attack. The other reason is they thought, well, let's spin the ball away from these batters for a little bit. This isn't new stuff. The word is new. The information is new and deep and everything else. Matchups have existed in cricket since before W.G. Grace was a sperm in his old man's scrotum.
Well, yeah, matchups have existed since the dawn of times, or pretty much the start of the game, or well, at least since the game got professionalized. And I think it's the data element that is newer. So now people are more aware of these things at a more micro level and they can really kind of dig deep. But even over there, sometimes they tend to lose the plot, which only goes on to show you, and everything you've said in your monologue just now goes on to show us just how complicated the job of a captain is in cricket.
Yeah.
And it's probably, you know, across all sport, I don't think there is more responsibility on a captain than there is in cricket, right?
HCL Tech brings you this show, and they're the only ones who love data, well, more than I do. I remember Mina Kimes was on a podcast recently. She was talking about how the NFL quarterbacks are the most, I forget the term that she used, but you can only be as good as the people you're throwing the ball to, right? As an NFL quarterback, right? So you can be a brilliant quarterback, but if your wide receivers can't catch, if your running backs aren't particularly good, you're not going to get anywhere. Captaincy is even more so. And a quarterback has someone in their ear, an offensive person giving them live information. You could, as a quarterback, you could literally, all you need to do is tell the players what play you're going to run and then react to how they move. In cricket, we couldn't even have a playbook for cricket. And it would be endless, the amount of different variables that you can have, right? Even forgetting the pitch, right? But just the amount of variables of fielding positions and strategies that you could come up with and everything else, and where you can bowl each delivery and all these sorts of things, and how you could move the field and everything else. We are asking these players to do all of this in the situation where also they might be fielding at mid-on, they might be fielding at slip, they might be the wicket keeper, they might be a bowler, they might be a deep mid-wicket. They're not standing above the bowler's arm watching from the Hawkeye view like the rest of us, right? Then the game is happening and they don't remember every single detail of it. And they've now got to do advanced math. There's so much going on to captaincy, right?
Yeah.
And there are so many occasions when teams get the matchups absolutely perfect, right? And no one ever says that at the end of the game. They go, that team won, great captaincy. And then when they lose, it's like, they're too matchup dependent. That's how we do things, right? It's the same with wicketkeepers are exactly the same thing. We do this with all different facets of sport, right? The truth is that in any single game, a captain is going to make a series of mistakes, right? Because it's impossible. You can't predict the future. And matchups aren't trying to predict the future. All they are trying to do is take a 50-50 situation and make it 52-48, 54-60. But what did I say? 54-46. That's all you're trying to do. Sometimes you might get a matchup where you're really lucky and it's like 60-40, right? But all you're trying to do is make little changes. And that is the same. That is what captains are doing all the time. And this is just another way of giving information to captains to make their job slightly easier. The more a captain knows, you know, the easier their job is. The hardest thing for a captain is they just don't know anything, right? And they're trying to react and all these things are happening around them. One guy's coming over to tell them one thing. Someone else is stretching beside them because he wants a bowl. And, you know, all these things are going on. The more information that we can give them, the easier it is for them to hopefully use their cricket knowledge to make the most informed decisions, right? We're not saying AI would win a cricket game because AI would make as many mistakes as anyone else. But AI might be in a situation where it puts itself in a slightly better thing. Just to finish this up, there was a company in the UK that tried to sell a program to Lancashire, I think it was to Lancashire, or one of the teams up north, where they had basically come up with a plan of, at the end of each over, they were going to tell the team who to bowl, who had the mathematical, the best probability of bowling. And I don't know if that system was ever solved, but when it was told to me, I said, well, that won't work. I said, because if I had that almost at every stage, it would be telling me to bowl Jofra Archer in the next over.
True.
Right? You have to have this longer way of looking at all these different things. And the mathematically best choice is not always going to be the best choice in any situation.
Yeah, and just as you mentioned, right, there can't be any playbook because the permutations are endless in cricket. It's just that complex a sport. So just to conclude this podcast, the title says matchups, myth or fact. Is it fair to say that matchups are fact, but not the only fact? There are tons of things that come into play, right? It's not just the matchup that dictates the state of play. There's just so much more. And if anything, the other factors kind of supersede matchups in a way.
Definitely. I think that's a good way of explaining it. Here's one for you from the non-cricket world. You know when people attack someone for being woke? And you're like, so what the original term of woke, what does that come from? It comes from black people saying that there are white people who understood that there were systemic inequalities built into the system, right? But that then becomes a very negative thing to say to someone after, you know, the first couple of years, right? Becomes a way of attack. Oh, Barham, you're so woke, right? Which means that, I don't know, you don't believe that someone, a child should go out in the snow or something, right? It's ridiculous, the sorts of things that is attacked to that. Matchups is very similar. The very basic idea of matchups makes a lot of sense. If I'm a captain and you could tell me you know, over a long period of time, if I use these kinds of bowls against these kinds of batters, and I'm going to have an advantage, you know, and I've got some right arm seamer who's really, really good at bowling to left-handers at the death. I want to know. I want to know that information, right? I want to know which of my batters are best against left arm finger spinners or left arm quick bowlers or whatever it may be, so that if I want to make a change, I can do that, right? But it became a dirty word really, really early on in cricket. And I think it's remained there. Whereas the truth is that they are just another bit of information that captains need to know in order to make the best decisions possible, right? And it, you know, once it becomes, once one, I don't know if you know the whole history of like political discourse, but it's like, you know, a politically correct, you know, becomes whatever the next one is, you know, a liberal, which becomes woke, which will become something else, and it keeps moving on. We do similar things in sport, right? Mm. We decide that this is the negative thing, and then we attach it. So the next one won't be matchups. It will be something else, right? Mm. And it will go on, and we will keep doing that because we're humans, and that's what we do. Well, some of us are.
Mm. And I mean, I had my formative years in Canada, so all of those different words that you used for, you know, being politically correct and woke and all that stuff, I'm all of those things. So, I mean, I guess that's a really good note and really interesting analogy to end this podcast on. And if you guys like this one, like it, share it with your friends and subscribe to this channel and Jared's other channel. We'll be back next week once again with another episode on Footbox. And I'll give you a little bit of a disclaimer or heads up. It's going to be on Nathan Lyons. So stay tuned for that one. That's all for episode 31. You'll see us once again next week. I'm Behram, he's Jared. And yeah, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Behram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you are a podcaster who happens to waffle on and you need a way to cut down your long-form content, Memento FM is here to save the day. They turn your lengthy media into bite-sized chunks for even the most time-starved audience. Start using Memento FM today.